First of all, before we begin, do we have any, maybe one question from yesterday?
The question is that how can we understand that, first of all, in the beginning, Kardama Muni, he wanted to get his wife, but then he rejected, he renounced.
Yes, you translated, yes. Yeah, this is the problem with this part of the Bhagavatam, and this problem is going to become even worse today. We are looking at Kardama Muni and Devahuti and forgetting that this is going on in the Satya Yuga, and Kardama Muni is a liberated soul, and Devahuti is not a neophyte. She's described as Yoga Lakshana, equipped with all yoga power. As we're going to find out today, not only is Kardama Muni a super yogi, but he is a great devotee. That's most important. So their coming together and separating is all done properly for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes their son and instructs Devahuti in the absence of her husband. Also, have you forgotten that when Kardama Muni accepted Devahuti's hand in marriage, he told her father, I will stay with her until she has a child, and then I'm going off to the Paramahansa stage of life. He's doing all his responsibilities. In other words, it's not simply his responsibility to be attached. It's also his responsibility to be detached. So all this attachment and detachment and coming together and separating is all taking place on the platform of devotional service. Let us try to remember this point, especially today, because we're going to hear some things that sound like, wow, this is the materialism I always wanted. We're going to hear about some extraordinary mystic powers and what seems to be extraordinary material comfort. So unless you can keep in mind the thread, the thick thread of devotional service, you may get lost in the circumstances of this history. As I said yesterday, this part of the Bhagavatam is a challenge to your head and your heart. Actually, we get bewildered by attachment and detachment because we're sometimes impersonal. As I explained 2 days ago, this world involves constant coming and going. All ashrams have to deal with that. And we spoke yesterday about the intense emotional gratitude, which is good for all ashrams. We spoke yesterday about how Devahuti and her relationship with Kardama Muni is also used by the acharyas as an example of guru-disciple relationship. So what we hear, remember, is Kardama Muni expressing his gratitude with voice choked with emotion. We spoke yesterday about how gratitude is an essential part of life, and bhakti gives us so many opportunities to express the kind of gratitude that brings tears to our eyes and causes our voice to choke. And Devahuti's reply was also with a voice choked with emotion. She reminded Kardama Muni, you did promise. Now, the promise Devahuti was reminding him of was for the benefit of the world, to bring into the world high-quality children. We should allow this part of the Bhagavatam to purify us, because there's not one pinch of selfishness going on. Therefore, all ashrams benefit by hearing this. But it takes some maturity to understand that this is their service to the Supreme Lord. There's no selfishness, even amidst such opulence, mystic power, and comfort. I have to admit, when I first read this, 35 years ago, I was overwhelmed by the mystic descriptions of the mystic powers and the material comfort of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. I was thinking, maybe this section of Bhagavatam isn't meant for brahmacharis. But as one advances in bhakti, one learns how to appreciate selfless devotional service, no matter how and where it appears. So please lend your heads and hearts and let us try to go very deep into this part of the Bhagavatam. Remember that Devahuti had the right to expect something from Kardama because of her service. Does that sound like selfishness? You'd say, well, if it's pure devotion, she shouldn't expect anything, right? We discussed yesterday how the disciple has a right to expect something from the guru. The disciple has the right to expect spiritual instruction. Render service and then expect some instruction. And remember this, the astonishing thing that Kardama Muni told her? He said, I will now give you the eyes to see what's been happening all along. Your spiritual development has been happening even though it's imperceptible to you. Now I'll let you see what's happening. So as the years go by in your bhakti, you're going to be astonished at the development that's happened without you're even realizing. A devotee is humble, so you don't think, oh, I am so advanced now. But you can look back and think, oh, 2 years ago, my consciousness was so bad compared to now. This is the amazing thing about bhakti. You can always look back to last year and think, what was my consciousness like? Why was it so low? You will never think, oh, now I am doing so nicely. This is the nature of real love. You always see there's so much more progress in love to be made. The more Krishna consciousness you get, the more you see there is to get. That's why a devotee feels helpless in ecstatic love of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya sets the example as the supreme spiritual teacher showing how to be a devotee. What did Mahaprabhu say? He said, if you see tears in my eyes and think I'm feeling bhakti ecstasy, let me tell you something. It's actually just a show. Because if I actually loved Krishna, I would have died long ago from separation. Has anyone ever told you that? If I actually loved you, I would have, just a moment separation, I would have died. So once again, this is why the acharyas sometimes say there's no love in the material world. But we may not like that, right? But the standard of real love is so high. But we're so hungry for love, we accept a few scraps and think, oh, this is the real glory of love. So once again, please do not become bewildered by the yoga power of Kardama Muni that you're going to hear about. Remember, he's a liberated soul beyond all material contamination. Devahuti reminded him of his promise. And being a yogini, she knows we need to change our living circumstances because our living circumstances are too peaceful, they're too serene, and Kardama Muni needs a different kind of energy to bring into the world a powerful male child. The yoga hut of Kardama Muni wasn't a suitable place. In other words, Devahuti is thinking about how a particular service can be done for Krishna. It's not the service of a brahmachari or sannyasi, but it is a service. So she's actually thinking, how can this service best go on? So if the saffron devotees understand this point, they won't get lost in this part of the Bhagavatam. She is thinking, how can the service to Krishna happen in the best way? Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that he is the creating of progeny when done according to Dharma. We cannot erase that part of Bhagavad Gita. It may not be everyone's service, but it is a service of one of the four ashrams. So Devahuti is showing very great conscientiousness in serving Krishna. So what did Kardama Muni do? Okay. The end of the simple yoga cottage on the bank of the Saraswati. Now, by his mystic power, he immediately produced a flying 5-star hotel. So they've gone from one extreme to the other. As you'll find out, though, they don't lose their Krishna consciousness. We won't say what will happen to us in such circumstances of opulence and power that we're going to hear about. Instantly, by Kardama Muni's mystic power, he created a flying five-star hotel that could go to any part of the universe. He's getting into his household life. But he had the power. He was not living beyond his means. Just like householders, according to how much money they have, they live on a certain level. Some householders live in a small house, others live in a big house. Some go to India twice a year, others go to India every 10 years. So it is important to understand that Kardama Muni was not over-endeavoring. He was not straining or struggling for material comforts. He was living within the budget. So please understand this point. So there is this flying five-star hotel. And what is Devahuti's reaction? Kardama Muni could just look at her and tell what she's thinking. The Bhagavatam says he had the ability to study anyone's heart. She was thinking, this beautiful flying palace is one thing, but look at me. I'm so unattractive because of years of austerities. She was covered with dirt. Her clothes were rags. Her hair was matted. Why did this happen? Because she was so absorbed in service that she forgot about her princess attractiveness. Prabhupada writes, it appears that Devahuti's hair had remained uncombed for many years and had become complicated in tangles. In other words, she neglected her bodily dress and comforts to engage in the service of her husband. Now, this doesn't mean that a devotee makes a fanatical effort to neglect the health or neglect the physical appearance. But it does happen that while doing devotional service, you go through austerities and sometimes the body suffers a bit. It happens in material life, right? So we want to take care of the body, but sometimes in serving Krishna, the body becomes run down. Better to sacrifice the bodily energies for Krishna than for Maya. So, although Devahuti is a princess, she accepted the menial service of her husband. In the same way, the disciple accepts the menial service of the guru. And sometimes in that service, the disciple becomes so absorbed that he or she doesn't pay so much attention to bodily necessities. So what did Kardama Muni do? He told his wife, go into the waters nearby where their hut was. It's called Bindu Sarovar, formed by teardrops, transcendental teardrops. So she dove into the water, and when she came out of the water, because of her husband's mystic power, she was an astonishingly beautiful person again. And by Kardama Muni's mystic power, he gave her 1,000 maidservants. So they've gone from one extreme to another. And they're going to fly all over the universe. And according to the Bhagavatam, they are enjoying each other's company. One thing we have to understand is that Kardama Muni did not lose mastery over the self. So when we read this part of the Bhagavatam, we can't read it in terms of Kali Yuga standards. The Bhagavatam says, though seemingly attached to his beloved consort, the sage did not lose his glory, which was mastery over his self. In fact, Prabhupada writes that the activities of Kardama Muni and Devahuti in preparing to have a family are praised by the siddhas, the perfect beings, because their activities are meant to produce high-quality living beings for the benefit of the whole world. So even though the circumstances seem to be very selfish, actually what is going on is simply selflessness. Now, think about this. You could be thinking, how could someone be selfless and remain properly situated in bhakti if they're living in such luxury? And they're enjoying each other's company. living in comfort that is beyond what the richest man on earth now could have. How do we solve this paradox? You see, what may be overwhelming opulence and luxury for you, for someone else is no big deal. Let's try to give some examples. What would happen 30 years ago if you told your family and friends, I'm going to fly to India to see the holy abode? The representation of the holy abode of the Lord in this world. It would be sensational news in Ukraine 30 years ago. All your family and friends would, wow, you're going overseas to India. Now, if you say that, is it such a big deal? I remember I was, I think, 11 years old. This was, I think, 1961. And my cousin had been invited by relatives in Bermuda to come. They paid for his airfare to come visit there. You know, that's like a tropical isle, a holiday place. It was just a three or four hour flight from where we lived. But back then in 1961, it was such a big event. My cousin was 12 years old. And the whole family gathered at his house. He's going to get on an airplane and go across the water. Amazing! So many relatives, 30, 40, 50 relatives gathered for this big event. He's going to fly from New York to Bermuda. How exciting! The first time anyone's done this in our family. 50 relatives gathered at his house, and then they all went with him to the airport. Three or four hour flight to an island off the coast of the USA. So you laugh now. But times have changed. People get accustomed to different levels of opulence. Now you think it's nothing to go from Ukraine to India. Go from Ukraine to New York. It's nothing. When you leave for India, do all your relatives gather at your house, 50 of them? Oh, how exciting. No, let's go. Bring us some gift back. So for Cardamom Muni, all that opulence and luxury was inconsequential. Although it seems to us like, wow, who could remain in Krishna consciousness amidst all that? Can you understand it now from this point of view? I remember when I was a little boy, generally every family had one car in New York. We could never dream of a family having two cars. Is that Purusharta Prabhu? Is that you over there? Did your family, when you were a little boy, have two cars? Yeah. I'm asking my godbrother. Now, for a family to have two cars, this is considered nothing. Families in Ukraine have two cars. No one says, how can you be Krishna conscious having two cars? I said, okay, you're doing nicely. Hope you use your money for Krishna's service. But if I was a little boy, you know, in 1955, and we heard about a family having two cars, we would think, who needs two cars? Why does a family need two cars? What are they going to do with a second car? So similarly, Cardamom Muni's opulence is like that. According to Kali Yuga standards, it's mind-blowing. So you read this part of the Bhagavatam, perhaps, with a little Kali Yuga tinge. Ooh, how can they remain Krishna conscious? I'd like to do this too, but would I be Krishna conscious? One thing you should understand is you should never bite off more than you can chew. Everyone needs to know what their limits are. Cardamom Muni and Devahuti were not living beyond their resources. And their bhakti was not affected by all this luxury. They're human beings on a different level. But we have to be honest about our level. We have to know where we are at and not imitate these great Bhagavatam personalities. So Prabhupada reminds us that the main thing to note about Cardamom Muni is not that he's a great yogi, but that he's a great devotee. He was a liberated soul and greater than even a demigod. So all his mystic yoga accomplishments were actually not very significant compared to bhakti. He always remained a bhakta in all circumstances. I'm sure we could not in his circumstances. So therefore, bhakti is always applied according to a particular time, place, and circumstances. Although bhakti is eternal and beyond time. Remember, Karma Muni and Devahuti are so pure that the Supreme Lord becomes their son. They're showing how to be attached and how to be detached. When it was time for Karma Muni to have children, he gave her 9 children at once. Why? He's thinking, she wants a lot of children, okay, let it all happen at once. She can have what she needs, and I can leave for the Paramahansa life. In other words, he understands what he's doing and why. He understands detachment is a part of life just like attachment. No matter what ashram you're in, you have to get used to persons coming and devotees coming and devotees going. For brahmacharis and sannyasis, our dear comrades sometimes leave this world, go back to Godhead. Unfortunately, sometimes they leave Krishna consciousness. This affects the heart. So, especially the brahmacharis need to remember that brahmachari life also involves the heart. There should be heartfelt camaraderie amongst the brahmacharis. Brahmachari life doesn't mean, oh, I have no heart, and I don't have to pay attention to my heart. Yeah. If you think like that, you'll fail. So all ashrams have to learn how to deal with these things of the heart. Gratitude and bonding and loving exchanges. It's not just women's talk. Real men don't talk about emotions. No, actually men are very emotional. It's just hidden deep inside. So even in the brahmachari and sannyas ashram, you have to know how to handle emotions. And this part of the Bhagavatam is very bhakti emotional. Devahuti gets 9 children all at once. As each child born was smelling like a lotus flower. That's mystic power.
Это мистическое могущество.
Upon the birth of these children, Karma Muni prepares to leave. What happens now? We come to the part of the Bhagavatam I spoke about at the end of the class yesterday. Yep. Devahuti is going to plead with him, don't go. But she's pleading with him not based on material reasons, but on pure spiritual reasons. She doesn't say, don't go, how will I get money? That's a legitimate concern if you have 9 children. Just don't go, I need a man at home. It's also a legitimate concern. Most people, men or women, don't like to live alone. Even brahmacharis should not live alone. They should live in a strong brahmachari ashram of camaraderie. But she's begging him not to go for other reasons. How does she make the presentation? She's smiling externally, but her heart is agitated. You see, Karma Muni wanted to finish his household life as quickly as possible. Prabhupada explains here. The example of Karma Muni should be understood very clearly. A person whose main concern is Krishna consciousness, even if he is entrapped in household life, should always be ready to leave household enticement as soon as possible. This is a difficult part for us to understand. In other words, spiritual attachment includes detachment. Bhakti means knowing how to be attached and detached, both on the spiritual platform. This is real mysticism. And you're going to hear from Devahuti the plea of a top mystic yogini. Her concerns are going to be about missing a great spiritual opportunity. This is a lesson for all ashrams. So Devahuti's lamentation is not just a woman's thing. It's also about missing a golden spiritual opportunity. I admit it took me many years to understand all these things. It takes a lot of thought and some realization. So I thought to share with you realizations of this part of the Bhagavatam. Karma Muni is about to leave. He feels, I've given her sufficient children. There's no question of her economic support. I said I was leaving before we were married. I said, at the right time, I'm leaving. Devahuti accepts that, yes, detachment is a part of our relationship, but she has some reasons. So she's smiling on the outside, but inside her heart is distressed. As she's standing there looking at him, she's scratching the ground with her toenails. It's a very high-cultured sign of indicating that she's distressed, even though smiling. So she begins to speak to him. How does she speak? Very slow, with charm. And she's holding back the tears. This is expertise. How to make a presentation. Just see how controlled her mind and senses are. She says, "My lord, you have fulfilled all the promises you gave me." She gives him credit for what he's done. That's the way to make a proper presentation. First, give the person credit. She told her husband, "You have fulfilled all your promises. Yet, I'm your surrendered soul. I beg you for one more thing. Give me fearlessness." She's smart. She knows what is the real gift to get. And remember, she's also demonstrating how a disciple should relate to the guru. The disciple has a right, in exchange for service, to expect instructions about how to become fearless in this material world. This is, Prabhupada describes what she said. "You have given me all sorts of material comforts by your yogic power. Now you are prepared to go away." In other words, that's all right. "But you must give me one last award so that I can become free from material conditioned life." This is a smart person. An example for everyone. She knows how to get the best thing. In other words, you've got so much mystic power, you could produce in an instant a flying palace. Certainly then, I'm going to ask you to free me from material life. Please think about this. How important is the gift of spiritual instruction to allow you to have no fear in this world? What do you think? She should have gone for the money, huh? How about another flying palace? One for my mother, one for each child. Or she should have said, let me find another husband, you can go. She is most intelligent. "You fulfilled all your promises, but I still want one last thing. Teach me how to be free from Maya." This is Devahuti's humility. Because remember, she's going to become the mother of Lord Kapiladev. But she knows how to make her present. She knows how to make her presentation. "My dear Brahmana, okay, as far as your daughters are concerned, they're going to go off and find their own husbands and live with their husbands. But after you go and become a sannyasi, who is going to give me solace?" Solace means relief from material anxieties. She was not asking for material comforts. She wanted instruction how to become free of the bodily conception of life. Her eternal relationship with Kardama Muni is based on spiritual instruction. This is the nature of their attachment. Material comforts will end with the body, but spiritual instruction is eternal. So she's actually, in a very eloquent way, telling Kardama Muni, "One last debt you have to pay. You have accepted service from me, you have a debt. In the ordinary way, you've paid all your debts. But there's one special debt I'd like you to pay." Similarly, the disciple has a right to expect instruction how to end material existence, to accept instruction from the guru. Actually, Prabhupada says something very powerful about that point. He speaks about husband and wife and guru and disciple. "It is the duty of the husband to liquidate his debt to his wife. The wife gives her sincere service to the husband, and he becomes indebted to her, because one cannot accept service from his subordinate without giving him something in exchange." This is the way of personalism, reciprocation. Now, what about guru-disciple? Prabhupada writes that the spiritual master cannot accept service from a disciple without awarding him spiritual instruction. That is the reciprocation of love and duty. So we're getting insight into the guru-disciple relationship here. The disciple has a right to expect certain things. And the spiritual master is obligated to deliver the transcendental necessities. In other words, no one should accept service unless they're able to reciprocate properly. Of course, what did Krishna tell the gopis in the 10th canto? I cannot repay you for your service, even in the lifetime of Brahma. You just have to be satisfied with your service. But how did Krishna then attempt to repay them? Who knows? In one sentence. He left them. Because that's the greatest gift, love of Krishna and separation. Can't understand it materially. I've given this example before in Ukraine. I think it's there in the book Bhakti Bhava. As a Brijbasi Bandhu, you tell your wife, I cannot repay you for all the service that you've done, therefore I will leave you. What would the wife say? She says, no way. How can you tell someone, I cannot repay you for all the service, therefore the only thing I can do is to leave you, and that way I give you the greatest gift. Well, that's what Krishna did. And Lord Chaitanya came to demonstrate what that priceless gift was that Krishna gave after he said, I can't repay you. To understand Lord Chaitanya means to understand love in separation. So Devahuti has a right to ask this of Kardama Muni. You've done wonders with your mystic power. You've given me all these daughters. Now please give me something for spiritual advancement, my spiritual advancement. She's very smart. She knows how to take advantage for spiritual advancement. She knows how to seize the moment. Everyone can learn from this. Now she presents herself as having missed a golden opportunity. We'll start tomorrow speaking more about this. She's going to say, I actually didn't take full advantage of your spiritual association. Not knowing your transcendental situation, I have loved you while remaining attached to these sense objects. Nonetheless, let the affinity I have developed for you rid me of all fear. This is a very powerful presentation. I didn't know your full transcendental glories. I thought you were just my husband. Now that I have realized your transcendental glories, you can't go. Brilliant. Don't go before giving me relief from material existence. Very beautiful. She gives him credit for what he's already done. The flying palace, the 9 beautiful daughters born smelling like a lotus flower. So she's pointing out the power of attachment. I was attached to you, but I didn't know the full benefits I could get from you. She's not afraid to admit there's attachment, there's a relationship. But she identifies what is the purpose, what should be the purpose of that attachment and relationship. She wants instruction that will free her from material existence. So finally, she makes a point that Lord Kapila Dev will also make later in the 3rd canto. Association it's a saw that can cut two ways. Association for the purpose of sense gratification is the path to bondage. But the same association with a saintly person leads to the path of freedom from material existence. Lord Kapila Dev will say the same thing. Attachment, when applied to the great soul, produces the greatest benefit. Attachment applied to Maya produces the greatest bondage. So we're getting insight into the nectar of attachment. It involves duties, obligations, debts, reciprocation, sometimes tears. It's all happening in bhakti. We're not afraid to be attached to the association of devotees. And devotees come and go. We're not afraid to invest our heart into devotee relationships. In bhakti, there's a proper way to show attachment, a proper way to show detachment. So tomorrow, we'll finish Devahuti's extraordinary plea, and we'll see what happens. We'll see how Lord Kapila Dev appears. So I hope that all of you, no matter what your situation in life, no matter what your ashram, you'll benefit by this discussion. We cannot neglect our hearts. We cannot neglect our relationships. And those relationships, no matter what ashram you're in, involve attachment and detachment. For example, a brahmachari may have been at a particular temple for many years, and his associates all relish his sangha, and then he's sent somewhere else to do service. That's an emotional event. You'll miss that devotee's presence. What to speak of if the devotee goes back to Godhead, as my godbrothers are doing. Hopefully I will do. These things happen. And they are big events for the heart. Just think of Srila Prabhupada on his departure bed, surrounded by his disciples. And how, with the disciples' love, they wanted to keep Prabhupada. Even delayed his departure for a few months because of the love of his disciples. But at the right time, he said, I'm going. Attachment, detachment is always happening in the nectar of bhakti. All for Krishna's pleasure. So tomorrow, we have more ground to cover. We're going to hear what Devahuti says, and we'll see what Kardama Muni does. Then Kapila Dev appears, and on our last day, we'll discuss how Kapila Dev leaves home. It's also very intense. All this coming together and separating, done in full Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much.